Black Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for $100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get $100 off a cocktail maker when you spend $400 through Cyber Monday. Visit bartesian.com/cocktail. That's bartesian.com/cocktail.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The history of television is a history of failure.
For every television series that lasted years and years, there were dozens that lasted only one season or less.
But did they deserve to die? Or were they canceled too soon?
Everybody, and welcome back to Canceled Too Soon. J'accuse! My name is William Bibbiani. I am a film critic. I write for The Wrap, and everybody calls me Bibbs.
What do V'accuse me of?
It would be, well, we know each other well. It would be T'accuse.
Okay.
T'accuse. J'accuse de stealing my heart.
Oh, aren't you sweet?
Yeah. Yeah, he's Whitney Seibel. He's a critic.
Le Thief de Coeur. My name is Whitney Seibel. I'm also a critic. Yeah, and this is Canceled Too Soon.
Yeah, this is the podcast where we review TV shows that lasted one season or less, sometimes much less. And that will be the case this... case. That'll be the case this week, because we're talking about a failed pilot, but a failed pilot with a huge pedigree, that I didn't know existed until very recently. And we have been, like, kind of hyper-aware of failed TV shows for a while. And I apparently have what's called an interest-based nervous system. So if, like, doesn't matter what I'm doing, I have a project that's, like, you know, 8 months long, whatever, and I'm like, I just found out this pilot existed. We have to do this now.
Yeah.
That's what happened. So here we are with the latest episode of Canceled Too Soon, and we're going to be talking about a failed pilot for a legal series created by Earl Stanley Gardner. And if you recognize that name, there are two possibilities. One, you do a lot of crosswords. Because Earl Stanley Gardner...
Blank Stanley Gardner, yeah, I've seen on crossword clues
before. It's one of the most common, like in the last, like, I don't know, 70, 80 years, one of the most common crossword clues, because Earl Stanley Gardner spelled his name. He was an author and a lawyer. He spelled his first name E-R-L-E, which is great for crossword puzzles because those are very common letters in a very uncommon order.
So you would know how to spell them. Yeah. You'd have to know how to spell it to use it correctly.
But also, it's just you can cram the words in together more easily if you have access to E-R-L-E. There's so many more options for creating the puzzle. But also, if you ever heard of Perry Mason, which is secondary, I think, to the crossword puzzle thing.
Perry Mason is, you know, to this day, one of the most famous lawyer shows ever made.
Is he the most famous fictional lawyer?
Well, Atticus Finch, but...
And still, Atticus Finch only had one movie. Perry Mason's so. Was on like a 9-season television series, ran for 271 episodes. He was in a whole bunch of books.
A bunch of movies after that.
And movies before as well. Mm-hmm. He made his big screen debut in the 30s.
That's true.
So like he's huge.
Yeah. Perry Mason, the Raymond Burr series though, the one that lasted for, you know, literally decades if you count the movies.
Yeah.
Just really ingrained itself in the consciousness. He is
a damn good lawyer.
He's like a really intense lawyer.
Yeah.
Who, his shtick was, he always got the culprit to confess on the stand.
Yes. It's which like, is not it, a thing, yeah, but by
it,
the way.
But it was you, wasn't it? Yes, it was me. I admit I did it. Like, that's the climax of most Perry Mason episodes. It's
deeply satisfying and not at all how the legal system works.
No, not at all.
But who cares? It's good drama. And yeah, it was one of like the first big like hour long TV series. It was one of the first big hits in that regard. He won a bunch of Emmys.
And he wasn't a DA. He was a defense lawyer.
Yeah.
And
he defended the defenseless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had his own like mini crew of investigators who would help him on cases. Mm-hmm. My favorite character on Perry Mason, apart from Perry Mason, was Berger. The actual prosecutor who lost every case.
Oh God, he was like the Washington Generals facing off against the Harlem Globetrotters every week.
But I admired that he always brought it. He's like, no, I got you this time, Perry. Like, because he actually had solid cases.
Well, it makes you wonder why he still has that job after a while.
Well, if he's the DA, he's got other cases. He's not only going up against Perry Mason.
I'm just saying, man. Hold on a second. How many cases do you think he has? He has one every week.
Most
lawyers don't have a case every week.
But this is TV lawyer land. All he has a case every day.
Well, that's true.
Two on Sundays. He's got a bunch.
On Ally McBeal, they would have a morning meeting. And it's like, hey, we have this new client and they're on trial for kidnapping or murder, whatever the hell Ally McBeal did. And the opening arguments are this afternoon. So get with it, team. And I'm like, no.
I wish the legal system worked that quickly.
I am a teenager and even I know that's bullshit. Perry Mason was a hugely successful show. There was a recent reboot on HBO.
Which, from what I understand, was supposed to be more accurate to Gardner's original novels.
Yeah, I can't speak to that, unfortunately. But I did watch it very recently, actually, thanks to a friend. It was really good. Mm. It was especially the first season. That's the 2 seasons. Second season was good. First season was fucking great.
Yeah.
Just really great character work, really interesting mystery. It did that thing where, like, we're kind of building up to Perry Mason being Perry Mason. Like, he isn't, like, fully formed in episode one. In fact, for, like, the first half of season one, he's a private investigator. And for a while, it worked. I sense your interpretation.
I don't like that origin story stuff.
It's
like
a Surf Dracula kind of thing, where, like, you know, in the 60s, Surf Dracula would be, you know...
Surf Dracula in first episode.
And then we'd have to find out how he got a surfboard in modern one. I get that, but... The story is so, and I hate using this word, so if I use this word, you know I mean it, compelling... that I was wrapped up in it to the extent that I knew exactly what show I was watching. But when the plot sort of shifted and he became a lawyer, I'd forgotten he was a lawyer. I was so invested in him as this private eye that I was genuinely like, oh, right, he's a lawyer. It's great. It's a really good show. So anyway, Perry Mason was a phenomenon. It was a huge hit series of books, had, you know, popular movies, huge TV show. The TV show had been on for 1 year on CBS, when apparently someone at CBS said, "Hey, Earl, five down." What's an 8-letter word for dingo? I don't know. They said, "Hey, Earl, what else you got?" Hmm. And it turns out he actually did have another series of books.
Oh, he's a prolific author. Yeah.
He didn't just write Perry Mason. He wrote a lot of different, a lot of similar stuff. But no, he had a private detective series with a fun mismatched duo that they turned into a pilot in 1958. And I'm going to let Earl Stanley Gardner talk about it a little bit. It's called Cool and Lamb.
That's right, Donald. And there's going to be a new client coming in every week. My name is Earl Stanley Gardner. I'm the author of the Lamb and Cool books on which this television series will be based. I have written many murder mysteries. But two of my favorite characters have always been Donald Lamb, the little thinking machine, and Bertha Kuhl, his big penny-pinching partner. To me, Billy Pearson is exactly right for the part of Donald, and Bene Venuta is just what I wanted as Bertha. The Kuhl and Lamb books have been successful for many years. I hope their television series will be equally long-lived and successful, and now let's see Donald and Bertha in action.
It's Lamb, L-A-M.
Yeah.
Not like the animal.
No, no. Kuhl and Lamb, they
now,
are...
That little introductory clip,
uh-huh.
I don't know... Because when you insert, if you slot that into the episode,
mm-hmm. which is it, the second scene of the episode.
Yeah, it's they give the little cold open, and then we have Earl Stanley Gardner addressing the camera directly.
Like, that lamb.
But the episode with that intro is like 31 minutes,
mm-hmm.
which is already longer than a TV slot was in 1958.
Yeah,
they probably would have had to lift that out to just make ad space.
Oh, this is definitely not supposed to be in the episode. I mean, he's talking to the network and the investors basically here. Maybe they could use that as an advertisement, separately, after this week's episode of Perry Mason, here's a message from Earl Stanley Gardner about our new
cool,
show.
It's cool that we got to see it, though, that it's like inserted into the episode.
Yeah, but no, this would have to be trimmed. Or expanded if they wanted to do another hour long, since Perry Mason was a hit. So the premise of Kuhl and Lamb is Kuhl and Lamb are private detectives. I always forget their first names. Hang on a second.
It's Bertha Lamb.
Bertha Lamb.
Or no, Bertha Kuhl.
Sorry, Bertha Kuhl.
And Don Lamb. Donald Lamb.
Yeah, Bertha Kuhl, who is played by Bene Venuta. God, I need new glasses. She's an older woman. She runs a private detective agency. She runs it with an iron fist too. And she is stingy as fuck.
Yeah, she's really strict about expenses.
Yeah, like she
doesn't want any unexpected expenses.
Yeah,
from this private
if you just sleep in your car and pack sandwiches instead of using the expense account, we can make a lot more money. So could you just suffer for me, please, this week?
Yeah. And she's saying this to Donald Lamb.
Yes,
who is. Like, he's really whip smart.
Yeah, very smart.
But very unassuming, like, almost wimpy in a way. Like, he's not actually wimpy, but that's the projection.
Well, he's a little wimpy
in
that...
personality he projects.
And that, the opening scene, and he's played by an actor named Billy Pearson, who actually didn't do a lot. And it's a shame, he's pretty good in this. There's a few bits where I feel like they were hamstrung by the amount of coverage they got, but I'll get to that. The first scene... is Lamb going into the offices of Kuhl and Lamb. And a guy, taps him on the shoulder. And he says, hey, remember me? And he's a former client.
I love this opening scene.
You're a former client. You had a colleague who had skipped town, and I found him, and I brought him back. And he's like, yeah, whatever happened with that? And he's like, yeah, he skipped town again with my wife and all my money. Thanks for bringing him back. And he punches Lamb, and that's the cold open. And that's... great, actually. I actually love that this is the late 50s and we're already subverting a lot of cliches that still emerge on television. This is not a tough guy, hard-boiled detective.
No, and the novels are already like 20 years old at this point.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
People know the cliches already.
Right.
The actual opening line is, it's like, hey, remember me? I was framed for murder? oh, yeah, I remember you. Says it so casually.
Yeah. Yeah, so the opening scene is our hero. Again, this is the guy who in another story would be played by Humphrey Bogart and be grizzled, or Robert Mitchum and pack a heater. And he just gets the shit kicked out of him, really, right in front of his office. And then Earl Stanley Gardner
is he just gets up, strokes his jaw, that'll happen.
Another Monday.
Yeah.
God damn it. This is the life I chose.
I love the power dynamic. Mm-hmm. Between Kuhl and Lamb.
It's a really fun pairing.
These two characters are great together.
Yeah.
Because Kuhl, because she's so stingy and kind of brusque and really take charge.
But in a fun way. That's cool. You know, it's not like, she's not like Ebenezer Scrooge.
No. She's understandably stingy.
Yeah.
And
working in L.A., it's not a cheap town.
But I love that she's the one in charge. She's the boss of the company.
Yeah.
And Lamb is, in a lesser sitcom, this would be sort of like a married couple where she'd be it would be like the Lockhorns. She's really kind of a Harridan, and he's kind of a layabout.
Yeah. It's like Niles and Maris.
Yeah.
Like Miles and Maris, yeah.
And physically, like, they have that kind of almost comic strip dynamic, because she's enormous.
Yeah, she's pretty, he's very imposing.
And he's this little tiny guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but I love that they sort of subvert expectations and that they actually have a really healthy working relationship.
Yeah.
Even if they're all constantly on each other's cases. So yeah,
they can rely on each other. They trust
they
in
bicker,
each
but they trust each other. It's like a really good working relationship. They're not necessarily great friends, but they really understand each other. And all that's established, like, immediately.
Yeah, right off the bat. And you can
just
tell
in the way they're talking to each other, some of the lines of dialogue.
And you can tell this is definitely a dynamic that's been built up over multiple books, because you can just settle into it really fast. Like, there's no question of how maybe the actors' chemistry might not find themselves right away. They did, but that's no guarantee. There's a lot of good shows that started with a couple of clunky episodes where people just didn't find the right rhythm. But no, here they clearly are. Another interesting bit of pedigree on this, because we mentioned it's a couple of different, you know, kind of awesome people worked on this. Earl Stanley Gardner wrote the books. Mm-hmm. Who directed it?
Jacques Tourneur.
Yes. If you don't know who that is, oh, you are in for a treat. You get to discover the films of Jacques Tourneur. Mm. He did a lot. In fact, he spent a lot of the end of his career doing a lot of TV, which he had done a little before Cool and Lamb, but this is like around the time he started segueing into doing more television. But in addition to doing like a lot of great like film noirs and a lot of different genres, one of the more influential horror filmmakers who's ever lived.
Mm. Well, he did Cat People.
He did Cat People.
That might be his most famous horror movie.
Possibly, yeah. Mm. He also did Night of the Demon, a.k.a. Mm. Curse of the Demon, which is extremely influential.
Yeah.
Like, Harry Potter ripped that movie off. Like, it's so good.
Speaking of Robert Mitchum, he did that film Out of the Past.
Yep, one of the most
in the 1950s. That's really
one
great.
One of the most celebrated film noirs ever.
Yeah.
So that's a good get.
Yeah,
that's a good get.
Seriously, just look into Jacques Tourneur's.
Yeah, and he made a ton of movies, like stuff that I haven't seen. Granted, but like I've seen, I Walked with a Zombie is incredible. Yeah,
that's right, I Walked with a Zombie
is
really.
I Walked with a Zombie is
the Jane Eyre story.
It's Jane Eyre with a zombie.
Yeah.
Yeah. In like the 40s, by the way.
Mm.
It's fucking great. And I love it because I haven't seen it in a while, but if memory serves, the opening line, it's like you can see like the Jane Eyre character and she's walking along a beach with some mysterious figure. You don't know if it's the... Who's the game? Is it Rochester?
Jane Eyre.
Is it Rochester? Is it someone else? I don't know. But she's walking on the beach with someone. And if memory serves, the opening line is in a voiceover, "Yes, I walked with a zombie." And I'm like, yes! Every movie should begin like this. Yes, I pulped fiction.
Like Cat People and I Walked with a Zombie and I think a couple others.
Leopard Man.
Were done by Val Lewton, writer and producer Val Lewton. Yeah. And the films those two made together are all just bangers.
Jacques Tourneur, and we talked about this in other podcasts, but if you watch Cat People, you can watch what is now one of the most common tried and true cliches of the horror genre get invented in front of your eyes. It's called the Lewton Bus. Mm. And the reason it's called the Lewton Bus was Val Lewton.
After Val Lewton,
But there's a scene in the movie where a character is walking down the street and it's very suspenseful and you know that a cat late person might be attack him, right? Like, oh, it could happen anytime. And then there's a really loud noise, but it's not someone screaming and it's not a monster. A bus just drove by.
But it breaks the tension.
It breaks the tension. Yeah, it's the horror fake out. So anytime you're watching like a slasher movie and there's a big scary noise and they look at, oh, it's just you, Mr. Whiskers. That's a Lewton Bus. And Cat People pioneered that. I'm sure someone had done something kind of similar before, but that's the one that made it a thing. That's fucking great.
I've brought it up before. There's a moment in The Shining where the scariest moment in The Shining is, of course, you know, it's not the killing, it's not the violence, it's not sort of the ghostly images, it's the word Wednesday, where Jack Nicholson is just sort of staring into the middle distance, and then there's this hard cut with a big musical sting and the word Wednesday appears on the screen, and that's when everybody in the theater jumps. It's like the scariest moment in the movie. Anyway, Cool and Lamb, I love these two characters.
Yeah,
and they're present, and because it's a detective show, they're going to be presented with a case.
Yes, the case. Every case is new case
is,
every week.
The case is way too fucking complicated.
Uh huh.
So
yeah,
they're being hired to locate someone.
Yeah, so this guy comes in and he's like, listen, I need you. There's a doctor and his wife who live in a small town near here. They're in Southern California. They separated in the 30s. This is late 50s, so like 20 years ago. And I'm trying to track down the wife. And I just need you to try to find her and also find out if she got remarried. That's it. Now, that is, honestly, the kind of thing a private detective would be hired to do. Most private detectives in real life, people think their spouses are cheating on them. Some missing persons thing. Need to track down someone for some kind of business. It's usually pretty banal in real life. That's not a great way to begin an episode of television, though. And I realize that, like, an episode that starts small and escalates can work, and that can be good TV. But we're trying to sell a show here. So I honestly think opening this episode with a story that begins so just non-committally and undramatically was probably a bad call. And shit happens. Like, people die. Like, it's a whole thing. But it's a weird start. So, Lam is sent to, is it Oakview, California, I think it's called? Yeah, he goes to the local newspaper because the internet doesn't exist. It's amazing how much, like, we take for granted just the stuff we can do on the internet that would have been a pain in the ass, like, 75 years ago.
Well, also how much information we could find without it that we can't with it. Like, it's,
anyway. So he's, like, he's in the newspaper office, and he is combing through old newspapers from around the time that this couple left town, trying to suss it out. And he meets a reporter, a very cool reporter. She is named Marion. She is played by Margaret Field, who is Sally Field's mom. And that's cool. I didn't put that together. Yeah, right. That is a cool thing.
Now that you say that, I can see it.
Yeah. But also the name. She didn't have, like, a huge career. Like, if you look at, like, her IMDb, she was in a lot. She was in, had, like, 97 credits. But, you know, she was in an episode of Perry Mason. She was a couple episodes of Perry Mason, actually. Two different characters. But she never had, like, that one big breakout role that you would know her from. Like, oh, yeah, I remember her from Blankety Blank. She was on the TV series of King's Row.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, good for her. That's, she's had a long career working in as an actor, and that's hard to do. But I just, my point is that I probably can't conjure an image in your head of her. That's kind of what I'm getting at. But she's very plucky, and she's very eager to try to help him. And also, she's kind of figuring out that, like, this guy is, like, this guy's on to something. There might be a story here. So she's trying to ingratiate herself with him. There's a scene where she's talking about, oh, yeah, and there's this lady who just came into town as well, asking pointed questions, and maybe this could be relevant. And Lam is, like, just looking at the old newspaper, like, you know, I just can't find a good place to eat around here. Everything is fried. And finally, she clocks him. She's like, you know, when you're trying not to look interested, you get a faraway look in your eye. But I know you were paying attention. And it's like, The timing on that scene is way off. It's one shot.
Yeah,
and you can tell that, like, Lam, I wouldn't be surprised if he's reading his lines off of that paper.
I got that impression, especially from Lam.
Yeah,
like he seemed ill prepared for a lot of his scenes.
Yeah, and he wasn't like a hugely experienced TV actor, but also the production schedule might have been rushed. This might have been something that they rubbed together. Maybe they planned to get more coverage, but no, we only have time to do it in a one-er.
The only scenes I think he was really well prepared for were the scenes he had with Cool.
Yes.
And the scenes he had, and we'll get to these in a little bit, with this, like, gigantic thug that was constantly appearing in his life and threatening
him. Well, I like
him. I think, like, his scenes with that guy were really good as well.
Well, he goes to see this other woman, and her name is, was it Evelyn? Can I remember?
Oh, this is a Galano Mastretta kind of thing. Yeah. Where, like, I can't.
Wow, a Mitchell reference. Yeah.
That's a reference to the movie Mitchell.
I'm sure everyone got that, right?
Yeah. No, in the movie Mitchell, there's these two mob bosses. One's named Galano, and one is named Mastretta.
And they're mostly off camera the entire time.
And they talk about these characters a lot, and I couldn't keep those two characters straight.
Yeah. It's like, does Estretta work for Galano? Does Galano work for Estretta? Are we ripping off Galano to pay Estrada or what?
Yeah, so
and it's just, because they just assume we're following this and we are fucking not.
There's like five or six names that they keep repeating over and over again in this pilot. And then later on in the episode, we're going to be learning that these characters have changed identities.
Yeah,
and this
so
one character was posing as a different
time.
Character. And I completely lost the thread. So I'm so glad you wrote this down because I would not have been able to give you like the actual details of this case.
Yeah. The character of Evelyn, who is the other woman.
She's the one who is married to a fellow who skipped town, changed his name, and remarried. Potentially.
No. That's another lady. She comes in later.
Oh, God.
This is the one who was hired to come to town to get photographs of the missing lady. The sexy one. In a hotel room.
Oh, that lady.
Yeah, her character's name is Evelyn.
Okay.
She's played by Allison Hayes. And Allison Hayes, you might know, because she was the attack of the 50-foot woman.
She's the 50-foot woman, yeah.
Yeah, which is actually a really good movie. Like, some of the visual effects are kind of wanting.
It sounds corny, but yeah. It's fine.
It ends up being, like, this really very successful metaphor for, like, a shitty, loveless, sexist marriage. Because, like, when she becomes 50 feet, her husband's still cheating on her. Like, she's finally has power. She can finally, like, tower over him. Literally, she's going to get her revenge, and she deserves it. And that's a genuinely good movie. I will defend that movie to the death. It sounds ridiculous. It is good. She reveals that she's been hired to get photographs of this lady. She also, this is, like, private detective work is, like, her side hustle. Because normally she works as, like, a host at a restaurant in Los Angeles, which is important later, but also really muddy, like, from a plot perspective. Like, okay, you're dovetailing too much together here. Dovetailing is something you do in storytelling where you have, like, two elements of the story. Often it's, like, two characters. Mm-hmm. And instead of having two characters, like, okay, we have a next-door neighbor and we have a lawyer. What if the next door neighbor is the lawyer? Great. Not only is that character more interesting, but we have half the scenes now.
Yeah, we don't need to.
But you can
fewer characters to keep track of.
But she feels like they overdid it. And like we just put things that just don't fit together in the same character. And it's kind of confusing. He comes to her actually because he's trying to get information. But he doesn't say he's a private detective. He actually says he's from the train company because her luggage was damaged, which is an incidental detail he picks up on. And he's like, yeah, no, I heard you were worried about your luggage and he wanted us to compensate you, so I just have some questions about it. And he surreptitiously gets information about this case. And he also says, like, listen, I'm going to just pretend your suitcase was worth $100 if you give me $50. And it's, so he's kind of conning her as well. But here's the thing. So Lamb, again, dweeby guy, little dude, you know, not the imposing sexual dynamo you usually expect in a show like this. He fucks because she's like kind of like intrigued by his like moral flexibility. Flexibility works too. Sure. So she's sort of like, you intrigue me now. And she's like, yeah, it's a shame I have to leave on the 5 o'clock train. And he's like, there's another one at 7:30. And it fades out. And like in the next scene, Marion comes up and it's like, oh, that lady just left on the 7:30 train. They fucked. Good for him. Well done indeed. Also the missing lady shows up and she says, oh yes, I just decided to come in town today for the first time in 20 years. For reasons. And I just want everyone to know.
She's not like a dowager. She's actually like kind of upbeat and conversational.
Look, let me have my voices. I just wanted everyone to know.
She's not Margaret Dumont, by the way.
I love Margaret Dumont. She should have been Margaret Dumont. I just want everyone to know. Oh, Mr. Flackfizer. I just wanted everyone to know that...
That was Nancy Marchand,
I know it was Nancy Marchand. I for a second... Oh, Mr. Firefly.
There you go.
It was Rufus T. Firefly. That was... She was in Duck Soup. She was the foil to Groucho Marx in Duck Soup. Anyway.
She was in all the Marx Brothers movies.
She was in all of them, really? Yeah. I know she was in more than one. Was she in every single one? Okay. She was part of the...
She was in most of them.
She was in a lot.
Yeah, anyway. She was like the straight man to the Marx Brothers.
I totally lost my name of that. So she shows up and she's like, yes, I'm here. I just want everyone to know for no good reason that I'm alive. I thought maybe you'd want to interview me at your newspaper, because that is a thing that happens when people are alive. Got it? Oh, and by the way, I never divorced my husband, so if he remarried, it's bigamy. Ha 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 ha. That probably won't be important later. Ta!
No, she says pretty openly, it's like, no, I know he left. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not together anymore. We never got officially divorced, but he's off and he has perhaps remarried.
Well, she specifically says that if he remarried, it's it's not a legal marriage.
Yeah.
She specifically throws that in there, mm-hmm. which is a tell. You know? It's just sort of like, you know, oh, we're accusing you of murder. Oh, yes, no. Yeah, no, I certainly didn't do it in the abandoned warehouse on 3rd Street. Well, now I think you did it in the abandoned warehouse on 3rd Street. Really? Why?
I remember seeing a Murder, She Wrote episode once where the big twist at the end of the episode was that the victim actually took his own life.
Mm.
But, like, arranged a gun in such a way that, like, after he died, it would, like, be... It's attached to a weight and would be, like, sucked out a window.
So they wanted to end their own life and frame someone else.
And frame somebody else. So, and
that's
then
a bold move.
And then before...
You don't even know if it's going to work.
Before he did it, he filmed himself saying, if anything should happen to me, I want you to know that the man responsible was this guy.
Yeah.
And so, of course, and then he, like, did his thing and it worked.
Yeah.
And he died.
See, there's an easier way to do that, which is, I just say that all the time about just random people who piss me off.
If anything should happen to me.
Yeah,
Alex Kurtzman.
Sorry, Alex
Kurtzman. No, Alex.
Just random. We were talking about Alex Kurtzman on another podcast. It's a side joke for a podcast you probably didn't listen to.
We were recording a Star Trek podcast and making jokes about Alex Kurtzman.
Yeah, it's
so that's
fine.
A callback to a different podcast.
It's
sorry.
Totally not a thing. Anyway, but yeah, no, just casually drop that. You know, like, oh, yeah, no, I don't know. I'm just saying, if anything ever happens to me, it might be Ratboy69 on Twitter. He was...
He was kind of a dick to me once.
Yeah, he was a dick to me once. Yeah, so if I do die, he's going to have a rough day. Good. Anyway, so she leaves, and it seems like, well, that's everything wrapped up in a little bow. We got everything that we need. Cool is happy, but Lamb... is suspicious. Mm-hmm. And he's especially suspicious because it turns out that Evelyn, the woman who was there to take photographs, has now been murdered. And Marion...
That's suspicious.
Yeah, and Marion saw a guy enter her hotel room that morning. Mm. She also saw some other pointed details, like when she walked in the room and saw the body, there were two cigarettes in an ashtray, but only one of them had lipstick. Remember when that could be a plot point? When cigarettes, everyone smoked so much that cigarettes would be an important plot point?
Yeah.
A lot?
So there's two cigarettes.
Mm.
One with lipstick, one without.
Yeah.
And now so that means we have, because one has lipstick and one doesn't,
the assumption is
there's a woman and a man.
Yeah, this guy killed her.
Never mind that a man could wear lipstick.
Never mind the manicure where it looks like maybe the woman
might
doesn't.
Not.
Yes. Yeah. But in the end, but here's the thing. This is also a trope. This is something that we would, if you were in a detective story, if Angela Lansbury was in an episode of Murder, She Wrote, and she saw two cigarettes on a nightstand in an ashtray, one of them had lipstick, she would note that. That would be worthy of noting, and we would sort of start putting, because the audience is trying to figure this thing out too. But they're going to be clever with it, and I appreciate that. Lamb goes back to the office. Marion is there. I don't know if she's going to be a regular or if she's just his, like, girlfriend in this episode, but they, like, hit it off real fast. Mm-hmm. And the client is there. And he kind of wants this whole thing just, like, wrapped up. Like, we're done here. But then Marion is like, that's the guy I saw walk into Evelyn's hotel room just before I saw her murdered. And he's like, okay, well, I appreciate that that looks bad. Anyway, he's trying to get out of it, and it turns out, and this is where it just gets more complicated from here, but in the nutshell, it turns out this guy is the missing husband, which I figured out from scene one. It's not that clever. Why else would he be looking? And he's trying to find his ex-wife, or he thought his ex-wife, because the plan was, because before No Fault Divorce, getting a divorce was a lot harder.
Yeah.
You actually had to have, like, a reason. And so...
It's coming back, baby.
Oh, God, help us. They want No Fault of the Worst to...
It's part of this...
Project 2025. They want it to be harder, like, for women to leave their abusive husbands.
This fascist wish list that we have to deal with.
Anyway, God help us, but I digress. So the plan was, he's just going to go, and she can divorce him in absentia on the grounds of abandonment. Mm. He abandoned the marriage.
Right.
Done. But he doesn't know that she did that. He doesn't have... He never sent him any paperwork or anything. There's no actual evidence. He just assumed she did. And so he got remarried, and now he's living in this town, like...
It's like 70 miles away.
It's like Santa Carlotta or something. Some vaguely realistic sounding town.
Oh, it is Santa Carlotta.
It's Santa Carlotta, yeah.
I made note of that because, excuse me, Carlotta was a character from Vertigo, which came out the same year.
Oh, there you go.
And I'm guessing that the makers knew that or were trying to, like, make a link to
Carlotta
Vertigo.
Carlotta was in the zeitgeist at the time. Everyone was Carlotta-ing.
Black Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year, too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for $100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get $100 off a cocktail maker when you spend $400 through Cyber Monday. Visit bartesian.com/cocktail. That's bartesian.com/cocktail.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But he's moved to this town. This town is, like, full of gambling and corruption, and he's running for mayor in order to clean up the town, and all of the gamblers who run that town are trying to dig up dirt on him so he won't get elected. And if they can find out that the woman he's married to isn't legally married to him, well, that's a scandal, isn't it?
Mm.
And it's like the election is in like 2 days. So if we can find this out the day before the election, it can be in the papers that morning. And, you know, papers were the original Twitter. Like, it was the last piece of news you saw,
you know?
I think
even young people are familiar enough with newspaper to know, like, how it functions.
I don't, actually. I'm not going to take that for granted. And I apologize if that sounds condescending, but I just want to make sure that we're clear, like, like, that was the place for information. That's where you got it all.
Mm.
So, if that was the headline in your town, that was the only news you probably saw that day. So that's all you had. That was the most recent information. No time for a retraction or a correction if it was wrong until the next day, and then the election's over. So he's screwed if, A, it turns out he's not legally married, and B, that information gets out into the paper. So they think, okay, maybe Evelyn found something out and he's trying to silence it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the cigarette thing. So... Honestly, we should be probably start wrapping this thing up, but the episode goes on a while. He goes to, like, investigate Evelyn's restaurant, meets a lady there, meets a like, hulking goon there. God, remember goons? We used to have goons.
We still have goons.
When was the last time you saw a goon?
In Abigail. There was the one guy. It was like
meant in real life.
Oh, real life
goons. They used to just have goons. Just, you know, the neighborhood goons. It would be like at the back of like the Italian restaurant or the.
I've seen like a goon.
Yeah,
I've seen like bodyguards. We live in LA, bodyguards. So there's like famous people around. And they have like bodyguards.
I guess the shadier you are, the more your bodyguard kind of doubles as a goon.
Well, a bodyguard protects you from like somebody who might, you know, beset you and attack you.
All right. My point is that if you send a bodyguard out to guard your body, but like the best defense is a good offense kind of way, then they're a goon.
Yeah.
You've just gooned them. Wait.
Goon has another meaning, you know?
I just did that. I'm sorry. I forgot about that for a second. I'm sorry.
Goon is a noun. It's also a verb now.
Yeah. I actually only just learned that very recently. My finger is off of the pulse.
Look, we're not young people on the internet. We're old people who barely are on the internet.
You know how they used to like have to sell like, you know, new editions of the dictionary, or you'd have to get a whole new encyclopedia with like 30 volumes every 5-10 years, something like that, just to be up to date? They should like print out Urban Dictionary in a book and just like leave it on your doorstep.
Yeah.
Like leave it on your doorstep like the White Pages. Remember White Pages? That was also a thing.
That'd be great.
Goons
actually
used to have
them. That would be great. An annual slang dictionary.
Yeah. Just boom. Okay. Here's the stuff. It's not all some listen, if you look at Urban Dictionary, a lot of that shit is made up to be put in Urban Dictionary. Like no one's ever actually done that. But some of it is actually pretty useful, and it would be really, really great if at the end of every year, everyone's like, here are the words you should probably know so you don't accidentally say something really vile. Because you might.
Skipping Ohio Gyat max level Riz.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can make up words, too. Just like the people.
That's Gen Alpha stuff.
They made up those words, and now they're real words.
I don't know why Ohio is part of the vernacular.
Well, it's an appealing word, you know, round on both sides, tall in the middle.
Yeah.
anyway, but
what I appreciate about the Gen Alphas using this kind of nonsense slang, Skibbity Ohio, that kind of stuff, they refer to their own slang as brain rot.
Yeah,
and if you
it's
use it,
self-aware.
If you use it, you have
that.
Brain rot. It's like they understand it's not a sophisticated way to communicate.
Yeah,
I like that.
I appreciate that
too.
It's self-aware. Jinx. But anyway,
there's a goon.
He meets a goon, and the goon's like, "Hey, I'm a goon," and he's just like, "Oh yeah," but he's like, "Well, if I could like call the cops on you, goon," and the goon's like, "I'm also a cop," and he's like, "Oh, well, that sucks for me," and he grabs
I like the.
Yeah.
When Lam is in sort of a situation where he would be kind of dominated, he retains his composure.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about the character.
But so he can't. He's not. Retaining,
I like the scenes he has with this guy.
But he's not retaining his composure because he knows he can take this guy in a fight. He knows he can't.
That's the point. All he has is composure, so he may as well keep it.
Yeah, exactly. And
I
love that.
Out of this guy.
I love because having a character who's like good in a fight knows some kind of, you know, Krav Maga, or has like is packing like a laser pistol or has superpowers. Yeah, fine. You know, that's a power fantasy kind of thing. But I find it more interesting when someone is outmatched and has to think their way out. And he doesn't come up with like a genius plan or anything like that. But he takes, and again, there was a time when people had pens, and but the pens
people were, still carry pens.
I know, but most very and you can still get it, but very few people have like fountain pens that you dip into an inkwell.
Oh, that's true.
Which I have, by the way, and I'm totally addicted to it. I love that.
A quill? You have a quill?
I don't have a quill. I have a fountain pen.
All right.
That is the hold on.
Well, it's not a fountain pen if you have to dip it.
Well, it is the basic premise of the thing, isn't it?
I guess so.
Okay, that's the same nib. And that's what that clinking noise was. But the point is, there's an open inkwell on the desk, and he grabs it, and he throws it in his face, much like, you know, a nerd on a beach would throw sand in his bully's face in order to escape. And he escapes. Haha. And at this point, the episode is finally wrapping up, and it's like,
Or is it?
Well, it is. And Lam says, okay, I got this. Well, let me make sure I'm not forgetting anything here, but I think at this point, Lam is basically just saying, no, I got this. I got this thing more or less figured out. And so he sends the client off to his hometown. Oh, right. No, shit. I did forget something. So
at the end of it. Yeah.
No, yeah, you're right. So at the restaurant, he finds out that there is this other lady who works at that restaurant. And they have a photo of her at the restaurant. And it's the lady who claimed to be the missing wife. So he goes to see her. And she's just like, oh, yes, it's you from the reporter's office. Yes, I am the missing wife. And then he's like, no, you're not. And she's like, shit. Okay. So
here's the deal.
Yeah.
We swap names.
Yeah. I was told to do this thing.
The most confusing plot point.
Yeah. I was told to do this thing. I wanted to come in here in order to, because like, what if they couldn't find the wife? Mm-hmm. Well, if I go in there and I say, this guy is a bigamist. Well, that's good enough. And if they correct it later, it's too late. So that was my job. I did that job. I absolutely did not kill that lady. I'm sure it was the missing husband who did that. And he's just like, okay, well, I have learned some valuable clues. And then he goes home, and then there's a whole digression where Marion had to, like, tell the cops what she knew, and the cops sent some people to tail her, and they all have to leave the office at different times in order to split the cops up so that he can go back to that lady's apartment because he figured out something. And he goes back there, and she's dead. She's dead. She turned the gas on in her apartment, or someone did, and she's at her table, and there's a note there. And I thought we were going to find out that someone killed her and tried to make it look like an accident. No, she didn't. And she wrote a note, and it's on two different pages, and it's basically saying, yeah, I did all of that stuff I told Lamb earlier about, and then also mentions a bunch of other stuff that, like, implicates...
On page two.
On page two. And he just grabs page two, because that's inconvenient to his client, and he just puts that away, and then the cops show up, and he's just like, oh, yeah,
oh, look,
no,
there's this one-page note she left.
Yeah, yeah, it's... And conveniently, it ended on at the end of a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
There was no hyphen there to indicate continued on next page. So, yeah, and it looks like she's basically saying, yeah, and he basically says, yeah, she killed, and that's the thing, he figured out she killed the guy. She killed Evelyn. And she killed Evelyn because reasons I'm confused by, but the way he figured it out, that it wasn't the goon, the obvious suspect, the red herring, or the husband, another red herring, was the cigarettes. And this is actually kind of clever. Because it's sort of like that riddle, like, I can't operate on this child, he's my son.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, okay, so the mom is a doctor, or dad's husband is a doctor.
Mm.
Like, there's a lot of different ways that could go. He didn't take that as read, and he realized that because Evelyn came in, like, first, Marion found the body first thing in the morning, the victim hadn't put on her makeup yet. And only the other lady.
Yeah.
So the killer would have been the one with the lipstick, so it must have been this lady. A little thin, but whatever, it works. And then Bob's your uncle were good. They've won the case. They're doing great. And I love what Cool says. It's like, yes, he gave me a big bouquet of money as a thank you. Because he got elected. Everything turned out fine. And Lamb says, great, I'm going to take Marion to a fancy dinner. And Cool's like, no, you're not. No, I know a cheap place on Pico. Yeah, they have sandwiches. There's a jukebox next door, and you can hear it through the walls. They're so thin. And it's like there's zombies. Wait, no! That's a cute ending.
Yeah. I wish Cool had done more.
Mm-hmm. She definitely should have been more involved.
Yeah,
she was in a few other scenes. We didn't really talk about it, but she's not in it much.
And golly, I wish it were written with better clarity.
Yeah.
This is a 30-minute show.
Mm-hmm.
All of that happened in 30 minutes.
That's a dense 30 minutes.
Too much happening.
Yeah.
What this TV series has in its favor are the characters.
Yes, the protagonists are great.
Which you need just a good... When you're doing a pilot like this, mm-hmm. you need a good taste of the kinds of cases they're going to do.
Yeah.
They're going to do... missing person cases, yep. mistaken identity cases, mm-hmm. etc.
Yeah.
Pretty typical stuff for detective stories.
And because this is so formulaic, we don't even have to see them meet. They're just installed, they're in place, someone walks in, boom, here's the case, good.
I don't need to see them meet. They already have the agency, we're good. This is where we want to start with them anyway.
A lot of pilots, they have to spend like half the episode setting up how the characters meet, how the premise is set up, and then we have to cram an actual plot to the second half. No, boom, we're off and running. Because they're so complete characters... We get it immediately.
Yeah.
We know who they are within two scenes. But yeah, no, this is a bad plot for a pilot episode.
Yeah.
This is not an exciting plot line. This is unnecessarily obtuse.
On this show, we talk a lot about what makes a good pilot. What do you need to establish in a pilot? You need to establish who the characters are,
mm-hmm.
their relationships to one another, the home base that they're going to operate from, where they're going to keep on reconnoitering to. Mm-hmm.
What a typical episode of the show is going to feel
exactly.
like.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's rough for pilots because very often they have to introduce all of these things
exactly.
in addition to telling a story. So often stories of pilots are a little bit too simple in a lot of cases.
That can also be the case.
Yeah, because we're introduced to all of the characters. We see how they meet. We see how they set these things up. And then they get to the story. And the story is like, well, we just need something that's fits in here.
Well, the other question is, like, you have to ask yourself, what's going to bring the audience back to this show? Is it going to be the strength of the storylines, which can be the case for, you know, Case of the Week shows, Monster of the Week shows as well, or is it going to be the characters and their dynamic?
And a lot of shows, especially in more modern renditions, try to set up an ongoing mystery of some kind. They introduce some kind of, like, strange, unsolved element.
Yeah, like, oh, I don't know. That's going
to take, maybe, you know, the years to solve.
Yeah, it's like, I just watched...
Oh, it turns out that character is an alien, and we'll come back to that.
Well, I just watched Elsbeth. I watched the first season of Elsbeth in my spare time. Really fun show. It's like a modern Columbo. And the whole thing is, she's a fun, bright, chipper person who wears very loud clothing, but she's also a brilliant lawyer, and she's brought in to consult with the police department to basically... make sure the homicide department isn't screwing everything up. But at the end of the first episode, we find out she's also been sent in to keep an eye on, like, the chief of police because he might be corrupt. And that's what's supposed to keep you coming back. In addition to, I like the characters in the first story was well written. Oh, how is that going to resolve itself? Is he on the take? That kind of thing.
That kind of mystery is always frustrating to me because I know they're going to try to tease it out as long as possible. And I get impatient with that after a while. I want them to solve that mystery.
The one, I find, and it's never more insufferable to me than if it's a will they or won't they relationship thing. Because they won't until the final episode. Well, you never do that.
It's even more aggravating, at least for me, for something like the TV show Lost, which has been imitated, you know, 100 times since that show came out.
Big Zeitgeist.
Where they introduce this big mysterious thing. And it turns out the plane was flying upside down and there was a portal to another dimension. And it's like, oh, that's
when they only saw a few episodes of Lost, by the way. That's not actually a thing.
I mean, generally speaking, in kind of mystery shows, the way they're built. I'm not talking about Lost specifically, but and there was this portal and I saw Bigfoot and the nuns said,
let me give you the actual Lost version. Why is there a polar bear on this island? And who are these mysterious others they keep talking about?
It's like, okay,
why do these same, like, five or six numbers keep showing up everywhere? That kind of thing.
And that's really intriguing when you first introduce it.
Yeah.
But when I get into the next episode, I know they're not going to give me an answer. In fact, I know they're...
Especially in a show created by J.J. Abrams, they won't.
Yeah, and so I know I'm going to have to, like, wait several seasons before they explain, like, why was the polar bear there? What is
they did explain the polar bear, to be fair. They did explain that one.
Not the same episode, though.
No. That was a mystery. But, like, they did get to that one. They didn't get to all of them. They just flat out fucking didn't.
So I feel like they present all these mysteries, and they're supposed to be mysteries, and the characters are so incompetent that they can't just sort of get together and figure shit out.
Oh my god.
They just sort of, like, bicker and, like, have all these personal dramas that I'm left with mysteries that are unsolved, and I'm just getting less and less patient with
the show. When Lost was on, I had a group of friends, and we had our own Lost drinking game. And one of the things, and this is a finish your drink kind of moment, when someone actually asks a direct question and they don't answer it. Like, there's literally, like, because there's, like, this smoke monster on the island, and that's one of the big mysteries. There's, like, an episode of, like, the beginning of season, the second to last season or the last season, where Locke, the guy played by Terry O'Quinn, one of the breakout characters, is there with, like, Benjamin Linus, who's, like, the guy who probably knows more than anyone else about what's going on this island. And Linus is just trying to, like, stay on Locke's good side because he's got the upper hand in the situation. It's like, fine, just ask me anything. Just ask. I'll tell you anything you want to know. And Locke just says, what is the monster? And Benjamin, Benjamin Linus is like, I don't know. Damn you to hell! You just finally had... No! We're just chugging our vodka. Oh, this is insufferable. But I digress. We were talking about what makes a good pilot.
What makes a good pilot? You don't need an overarching mystery of some kind, especially in a 30-minute detective series.
Right.
You need a good good characters, understandable premise, character dynamic where you know where these people stand, how they're going to react in certain extreme situations.
Hopefully something that stands out from other similar shows. Exactly. Like, why would I watch Cool and Lamb and not...
some other detective.
The other Marcus Welby or whatever,
Yeah, tone is really important. I feel like this has a very light tone. It's almost comedic.
It's very light. Yeah. there's peril, like, but it's definitely got a
and this is where Cool and Lamb falls down. You need a good tight story.
Yeah, that's the thing. This pilot doesn't promise you that the actual episode to episode stories are going to be. I mean, it's not bad, but it's also not particularly good.
No, like, the story is fine, but you need to cut out, like, five or six details.
You either need to
streamline it a little bit. Let us know, like, Cool goes on one case, Lamb goes on another case, and they come together at the end.
Something like that would have been fine. Yeah. Or, I mean, you have two options. You either streamline this story, and either way, you have to start the story with a more intriguing setup.
Yeah.
Like, just something like, oh, you have to find the jade monkey before the next full moon, that kind of thing. Not that, but you know what I mean. Something like, ooh, mystery. Mm-hmm. Or it's an hour-long show and you actually have some room to breathe.
Yeah.
And you can set up the characters enough so that when you find out, oh, the client's real name is blankety blank, well, I remember what his name was in the first place because I spent a few extra scenes with him, as opposed to, all I know is he introduced the plot.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't really mean anything to me. And so that's a miscalculation. And honestly, it's one of the more just obvious and frustrating miscalculations because you were so close. And I guarantee there are 20 fucking books in this fucking series. You had material, man. Just Perry Mason's on at the same time. Just pluck one out of there and just replace Perry Mason and Della Street and just make them, give them funnier dialogue because they're Cool and Lamb, and you're good. Clean storytelling.
Oh, here's an idea. And they would never have done this in the 1950s.
What?
Do Law and Order, where Cool and Lamb are the law, and they investigate the case, and then Perry Mason is the order. He does the case in court.
Okay.
In a different show.
That's
way too ambitious for the 50s.
That would
be a
fun crossover, though.
Yeah.
You could
do it once.
Like, they did do crossovers in the 50s. They did, there was an episode of...
It would be great if there were, like, twin shows.
Oh, I know.
Did that every week. But,
the Hardy Boys Nancy Drew Mysteries would do that in the 70s.
Oh, all the time.
Occasionally crossover. But, like, even in the 50s, there's one classic episode of I Love Lucy where George Reeves shows up as Superman.
As Superman.
There's plausible deniability about it. The idea is it's little Ricky's birthday, and it was one of the later seasons, so he's like old enough. He's got some dialogue, and he wants like Superman there for his birthday, and they get Superman. They never call him by the actor's name. The implication is might be Superman, and then Lucy, not realizing that Ricky was able to get Superman, has dressed up as Superman and is like going to try to come in through like the apartment window. But they live on, like, the 8th floor, and she gets stuck, and Superman has to save her. It's cute. It's a very cute episode of TV. But you could do that. That's an actual thing that could happen.
Yeah.
There was an episode of, what's his name? Comedian had his own show.
Ed Sullivan?
It wasn't Ed Sullivan. It was someone who had, like, actually done,
Chevy Chase?
Who was in, To Be or Not to Be?
Mel Brooks?
No, the original.
Oh, Tyrone Power?
What?
No, who was in To Be or Not to Be?
Oh, God, this is going to drive me nuts. If you're shouting the answer to me, I'm just going to remind you that this is what it's like to be a ghost. Jack Benny. Jack Benny. The Jack Benny Show. Jack Benny Show did an episode in the early 60s with Rod Serling as himself. And Jack Benny got sent to the Twilight Zone, and Rod Serling was the mayor of the Twilight Zone, which was named after him. Everyone calls him Twi. This is an actual thing. It was great. I can never find the whole episode. I only found like one chunk. I've been trying to track down the whole
weird
thing. It was great. But like, you could do that. That's not outside the realm of possibility. And especially considering they're both Earl Stanley Gardner, they'd both be on CBS. Totally doable. Would have been fun. And what would the show be like on a week to week? Different cases, hopefully more interesting.
Yeah, that's the only issue I have with this is, you know, it's not like it's incompetent, but it's just overwritten.
It's overwritten. Yeah. It's really overwritten, and we just need to focus. It needs to be more like The Thin Man, where the case is there, but mostly we're there for Cool and Lamb.
Yeah,
you know, like they're gonna solve the case, but I really just want to see them interact and like play off of each other because they've got a good dynamic going. And if the case is also exciting, awesome. Or if the mystery is also clever, awesome. But if it's not, as long as we're spending a lot of time with them together, we're in the clear.
Mm.
But we didn't get that in the pilot. I don't know if that's the reason why they didn't air, that they didn't go to series with it. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
Yeah.
So the question we have to ask ourselves, was Cool and Lamb canceled too soon?
I'm going to say it's no, but it's a qualified no.
Okay.
Because I feel like if we're treating this like a pilot, which is a model for a later show.
Right.
Not the first episode of a show as it's going to stand.
Mm.
It means this can be tinkered with.
True.
If this was the first episode of a show, I wouldn't want to see another. Mm-hmm. That the writing isn't good enough.
Right.
It's just not tight enough. I couldn't follow the mystery. I like the characters, but this isn't the kind of story that I'm going to want to come back to week after week. Stories I can't follow. If we're going to rework the show and do many of the suggestions we've put we laid down, write a different kind of story, make it an hour long, give it a little bit more of a Thin Man dynamic where we're kind of like with the characters more. That's a show I would want to see.
Yeah.
Because I like Cool and Lamb. I like these characters. I even like these actors.
Yeah.
But it feels unfinished in its current form. And I feel like once it's refined and reworked into a series, then it might be a good series. But we don't know what that series would look like.
No.
We can only
I take it as read that because it's a pilot, tinkering can be done.
Yeah.
Like, we shot the pilot and, oh no.
If the actors dropped out?
Yeah, oh no. Benet Venuto. We couldn't get Benet Venuto. We had to replace with Margaret Dumont or whatever. I don't fucking know. Like, that happens. Hell, back in the day, they just recast someone between seasons and just, you wouldn't even talk about it.
Uh-huh.
Like, it didn't happen all the time, but it happened enough that it's a joke. So I'm taking it as read that this is a pilot, tinkering will occur. Mm. And because it's a 30-minute pilot, like literally 30 minutes, they did not expect this to air in its current form. I don't think so. I think...
Especially if they have that Earl Stanley Gardner intro.
Yeah. But if they don't, because based on what he says, I think that was more for investors or the studio heads than anything else. But even if they don't, that's not a lot of time for commercials. I suspect this was more of a proof of concept kind of thing, or maybe we can flesh out this story and turn it into an episode later, just by filming a few extra scenes if we make it into an hour, or by cutting it out if we do a half. But yeah, if this is our best foot forward, yeah, that's bad. But I see no reason why this can't work, because the entire thing that really is bringing this down is the first plot kind of stinks.
Mm.
Well, we're not going to do it again.
Yeah.
We'll do another plot next time. So I will just tell everyone, Earl, 25 across.
Mm. Stanley Gardner.
Do a better story next time.
Mm.
Like, this wasn't, like, a badly written story, but it's not good TV.
Yeah.
So we need a catchier hook, and we need a story that lets Cool and Lamb interact more. And if we can get that, we're on easy street. We win. So I'm going to say it was canceled too soon, because I see no reason why that couldn't be fixed going forward.
Yeah.
So that's it for canceled too soon.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much. Next time on Cancel Too Soon, which probably won't be next week because it's the end of the year, we're crunching, but we're working on it. You found something fun.
I did.
Yeah.
It's finally up. Which one were we going to do? Because I found a couple of fun things.
We did find a couple of really fun things, but I think we should do, what was it, the Alex Winter show?
Yeah, the Alex Winter. Prior to making the movie Freaked, he kind of laid down his... sense of humor in a show on MTV called The Idiot Box, which was a sketch comedy show that he put together, interspersed with music videos because it was MTV. And it was unavailable for the longest time, and now it is finally available again. We found a way to watch it.
Yeah.
So we're going to watch it.
Yep.
We're going to watch The Idiot Box.
Yeah. This is on MTV, right?
On MTV, right? Yeah.
So it's an MTV sketch comedy show. We're huge fans of The State, which was an MTV sketch comedy show of the time. And maybe The Idiot Box will also be very funny. I suspect this is going to be one that I watch and then go, oh, I remember that. Because I watched a lot of MTV in the 90s.
If you've watched the movie Freaked, which is a movie I adore.
Oh, yeah, very funny.
From the early 90s. A lot of cool, awesome creature makeup effects. You'll note that it's kind of a caustic movie. Like, yeah. There's a lot of, like, screaming and foul language and,
yeah.
and kind of lowbrow humor.
It's very Adult Swim.
Yeah. Prepare yourself for a lot of screaming.
Yes!
There's going to be a lot of screaming and violence in the Idiot Box.
There's a whole school of comedic thought that is just, if you scream it, it's funnier. Like, that's Invader Zim.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, if you say, like, I'm going to conquer the Earth, and, okay. I'm going to conquer the Earth! Funnier!
I forgot the actor who plays Zim, but he is a genius.
Oh, yeah, what's his name? He's that one guy.
He's that one guy.
You know that guy.
The opening scene of The Idiot Box, the very first episode, the introduction is Alex Winter playing himself, is introduced in the trunk of a car. They open up the trunk of a car, and it's like the beginning of Goodfellas. There's guys there. Richard Stephen Horvitz. He is a genius. He is great in Invader Zim. But in The Idiot Box, the opening scene is Alex Winter gets up out of this trunk. There's gangsters around him with knives, like in the movie Goodfellas, and they say, lay back down. He's like, hey, I'm Alex Winters. Welcome to the Idiot Box. And they start stabbing him. And the camera stays on his face, and he's like wincing in pain as he's getting stabbed. Oh, God. Welcome to the Idiot Box. You're going to see some really good comedy. Oh, God. It's really bizarre and fun. Ah, like he's getting stabbed to death in the very first scene of the Idiot Box.
This happened a lot in the 90s.
This is where we're starting.
Well, we checked on another sketch comedy show from the 90s you liked.
Oh, yeah, The Edge.
Called The Edge, in which every episode, this is a sketch comedy show starring Jennifer Aniston before she was on Friends.
Yeah, Wayne Nigel. It was Julie Brown's show.
Yeah. Every episode began with the entire cast dying.
They got killed, and they all gathered in a room, and then the set would fall on them. They'd run and get hit by a truck.
That was their version of Live from New York at Saturday Night.
They'd all die.
Yeah, it's dark, but it's funny. Yeah,
dark, violent humor was in the zeitgeist, I suppose.
Anyway, that's coming up next on Cancel Too Soon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to all of our patrons over at patreon.com/... Critically Acclaimed Network. In addition to getting episodes ad-free, you got to listen to this episode quite a bit early, actually. We don't always record them early enough that we can do that, but we do our best. But we have a lot of exclusive shows over there as well. We have our Star Trek series, All Our Yesterdays. We're reviewing every single episode of Star Trek ever. We're about to start Deep Space Nine.
That's right. We're like two episodes away.
And we decided we're going to release that episode, the first Deep Space Nine episode, on the main feed, give everyone a taste, let you know what you're missing. That's coming up. We do commentary tracks. We do online hangouts and a bunch of other stuff. Besides, there's a huge back catalog of stuff available. Get a Patreon subscription for your friends for the holidays. Hmm. Yeah, that's a thing you can do, right? Probably.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think you can gift those. Yeah.
It's certainly a possibility. Even if this doesn't apply to us, do not sign up for Patreon stuff like through your Apple products, because they like are taking like a huge percentage out of that now. If you sign up directly through Patreon on like your laptop, much better. The money is going to less evil places. Anyway, so that's the thing. So thank you to all our patrons. You're really awesome. And thank you to anybody else who might join, because that's nice. If you want to talk about anything we discussed in this episode, do you know a lot about Kool and Lamb? Have you read the Kool and Lamb books? I'd really like to hear about them.
Yeah.
Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Whitney, what is our P.O. Box?
Yeah, send us a physical letter to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Yes, and when we have enough correspondence, we do another episode of our podcast, We've Got Mail, where we answer that correspondence. And of course, we're on social media, not on Twitter/X.
No, we're off.
We nuked our accounts.
We're out of there, yeah.
We didn't just stop posting. They're gone now. We are on Blue Sky. I'm at William Bibbiani.
At Whitney Seibold. Same names.
Yeah, and we're at Critic Acclaim. I wanted to get Critically Acclaimed, but apparently that's still too long.
Come on, Blue Sky.
Blue Sky.
Blue Sky.
You're supposed to be the good one.
Blue Sky's fine because there aren't Nazis.
We're not giving the Nazis a toehold on Blue Sky, and that's pretty great, actually. And I was hearing like reports from people who still like check in on Twitter that apparently they're eating each other alive over there.
It's
like
they have no one to provoke anymore.
Yeah, they're not trolling the libs anymore, so they're just fighting each other. And I'm like,
good, let them eat each other.
Let them fight. It's so great. But Blue Sky is great. I highly recommend it. It's a really, really good alternative. So that's it. And thank you for listening to Cancel Too Soon. That is a wrap. We'll see you next season.
Black Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year, too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for $100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get $100 off a cocktail maker when you spend $400 through Cyber Monday. Visit Bartesian.com/cocktail. That's BARTESIAN.com/cocktail.